This episode of AV Excel is recorded on February 22nd, 2017. Oh my goodness, we've got viewer questions, three solid calibration apps for Apple TV, Kavo, that's one box to unite all the things, Samsung's Q8, and quite a bit more. And hey, to everyone that keeps AV Excel running by contributing at patreon.com/AVExcel, a big thank you.
Testing, 1, 2, 3. All right. I'm not blowing anything out.
Ignorant weasels chewing on your soul. Ignorant weasels. Do you have speed?
Yeah.
Welcome to AV Excel, your guide to the best in home theater gear and content, no matter what your budget is. And we're going to be talking speakers. We're going to be talking headphones. We're going to be talking 4K. We're going to be talking Kavo, which I am fascinated by. But I should introduce my partner in crime here, Mr. Robert Herron.
Hello, everyone.
How are you, sir?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. I think we might have a full day without rain in California, which is now I've cursed us.
Another
week of rain.
Don't be talking the crazy talk.
Aside from the weather, I've seen lots of good stuff lately. Beautiful imagery, incredible audio. It's been a pretty good couple of weeks, I have to say.
Oh, man. I'm kind of excited. Be heading down to L.A. on Friday. The Source AV down in Torrance, California, which I have never seen, but I am told it is Mecca for speaker and home theater gear.
Ah.
I will bring back pictures and stories, but they've apparently gathered all the top of the line electrostatic headphones in one place, and the crew from Cavalli Audio and the Source AV Design Group asked me if I wanted to come down and hear all of them because they're putting them together for a day.
That's sweet.
At their location. I'm really excited. So I've heard, I think, most of them. I haven't heard all of them, and certainly not in an environment that wasn't really, really crowded and loud. Like, I love Rocky Mountain Audio Fest, but there's like 150 people in a tent.
It's the first thing I'm thinking of. This sounds like it's going to be somebody's playpen or their backyard where they're going to have a nice setup in their own controlled environment without the mayhem of a trade show going on around it.
Well, the Source AV is down in Torrance, California, and I have not seen it myself, but people who have, they have a $1.3 million home theater built into here and like $15,000, $25,000, you know, I do not wish to misspeak because I do not know the numbers, but imagine a massive industrial park space filled with listening rooms. That's what I've told it's like.
You two can create a business and write this stuff off. Glorious.
Well, it's also, I mean, if you think about it, right, this is... You know, this is L.A., this is Hollywood, this is television production.
Home of Stuart Film Screen, Torrance, California.
And so many other places. So I'm excited to road trip down there. But one of the things that dropped, like literally while we were recording last week, a company called Kavo did their presentation, I want to say it's at Recode, which is... Like a demo type environment with the crew who are now Recode crew, which are now merged with TheVerge.com. But it's a $400 set-top box. Unites Amazon, Apple, and everything else into one TV interface. And it's this beautiful stylistic. It's like bamboo with a bunch of silver buttons on it and a big black screen. And
something that wouldn't look awful on the coffee table.
And it was interesting watching because I tweeted the story out and people were like, this is stupid. Why don't you just get a Harmony? But the idea, and it's pretty big, right? It's a 16-inch box, weighs 4 pounds, has 8 HDMI inputs, an Ethernet port, 2 USB ports, a power port, 3.5mm jack for an IR extension cable. They do bamboo, mahogany, or tiger wood. There's a big fat steel base. And I'm gonna quote The Verge right now, or more accurately, Lauren Good over at The Verge. And the idea is that you're supposed to run all of your external TV boxes, Roku, Apple TV, Fire TV, etc., as well as a cable box through the Kavo box, and it will present every video option available to you in the same bare bones interface. It supports 4K video and also comes with a capacitive touch voice control remote.
Excellent. Yeah. There is such a need for a product like that compared to, say, the current scene of trying to do that through the apps in a TV.
Right.
And the mishmash of it's pretty much up to each developer to create their own branded interface. When in typical usage, at least in our household, people kind of know what they want or they're in a well-established trend of watching, and it's just like mostly get me back to the app or let me switch between the apps easily. And it all kind of goes back to that whole thought we've been discussing over the last few episodes about simplifying that home theater experience, in a sense, moving the apps out of the TV.
Yeah.
And this literally would allow you to maintain a consistent interface across multiple products or through multiple televisions or display systems.
Well, at this point, my understanding is it connects to a single
upgrade
television.
The TV, but you don't have to upgrade your interface with
yeah.
it.
It's an interesting company, right? Because one of the reactions I got was like, ugh, you know, it'll work until the first software update breaks it. And that's the challenge here, right? So Cavo was initially founded 2014. Blake Krikorian, who was the co-founder of Sling Media, right? Remember the Sling Box? It's still out there.
Still there.
You know, they've got an engineer that worked at Jawbone and then Sling and then on the Xbox. Really interesting group of people. And
quick question: does this actually have any built-in compute power to run apps, or is it requiring you then to hook up external boxes? It's going to do it through like a CEC control. That's the kind of question.
Understanding is that you're going to end up plugging your boxes into this.
Because I think the next gen then would be to have a device like that just maintains a consistent interface with other services. But I don't think that's even possible.
Well, that's
with licensing the way it is with. They might require.
Well, Nilay Patel did a follow-up on this. And the title's, you know, classic Nilay. Exclusive, the Cavo streaming box is built on game-changing machine vision for TV. And that sounds, you know, kind of clickbaity and over the top. But so the idea, right? Universal control system for every other streaming box you might have, quoting Nilay there. You know, an Alexa skill. Quote, they're processing the video your TV streaming boxes send over HDMI using machine vision to figure out what's on screen and then determining what command to send next based on that information. So he writes, essentially, Cavo has built an AI that simulates a human user to control any device you might attach to a TV through whatever method the system can use, whether it's IR, HDMI, CEC, or direct control over an API in your home network. They're calling it Visual Analytics, or VA, and it is quite possibly the thing that will crack the entire living room convergence game wide open.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
It'll be curious to see how that will deal with software changes and updates and things like that on the provider's end.
Yeah.
Ideally, you would have a machine looking at new interfaces and just updating software accordingly. That would be a very efficient way of trying to maintain a system like this. So,
well,
I dig it.
Nilay points out that the Xbox One
sure looks good on paper,
and its attempt to be a quote ambitious TV control system kind of, you know, failed utterly and totally.
Had some right parts and right concepts.
It's so close and so far.
But again, it's also too anything to simplify that user experience day to day, and to get it down to one. And they're showing these remotes with like a nice piece of wood with one button on it. That's how nice would that be?
It would be really nice. It would. We will see, right? Because the other thing is,
totally.
You know,
it's got to work.
One of the things you have here, right, is part of the reason you know Apple doesn't like Amazon, so Amazon Prime is not on Apple, you know.
Oh, really?
Amazon's got so pissed off at Apple, they stopped selling Apple TVs because Apple wouldn't put the, you know, the Amazon Prime app keeps not showing up on Apple TV unless it showed up since the last time I
searched
for it.
Google Chromecast either.
Right, yeah. But
unless
you know what I mean?
Forcing through a browser.
You've got Google and Amazon and Apple and Microsoft all fighting with each other and all fighting with the TV and movie production companies. And so this is an interesting idea that, you know, that there's going to be one box to make everything play together. So, you know, I don't have to be like, oh, I can't get it on the Apple TV. I have to fire up my Roku. Or, oh, I don't have it on my Roku. I have to fire up
Totally. And if they can minimize the time between that switch, if they can maintain all these connections simultaneously and deliver the content from these service providers in a streamlined way, that's something I really do need.
There was a wonderful HDMI technology that basically kept the HDCP sync to all of your boxes and your television so you could instantaneously switch. Now, the HDCP handshake has gotten considerably shorter than it was 4 or 5 years ago, you know, but just the idea of instantaneously switching between devices.
Without a doubt. But maintaining a consistent interface throughout that. If I if these fucks can pull it off, I'm now more interested in this than I was like 10 minutes ago. So,
well,
I'm digging it.
We will see if we can get eyeballs on with it. It's going to ship this fall, $400. Not cheap.
No, good remote, though. That you're getting close to that from any of the big guys. Well, Harmony, others. But
yeah.
Well. That Ultimate from Harmony is not a bad controller. Thing works pretty well. I got to admit.
Anyhow. Upcoming events at this are listed at the Source AV on their webpage, and we got a link to that in the show notes. And,
cool.
If we get this out in time, it's June 18th is the primary day, and I'm going to be down there on Friday to listen to all the shiny. So much shiny.
A couple months from now? June?
Oh, I thought it was this Friday. Well, hey, you know what? This is great.
That's a head alert. A head alert. Red alert. No,
that's a shockingly early alert for us.
We are on top of this.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, man. New headphone. Well, let me just double check. In
We got links.
We got links.
And notes.
We also got more news to talk about. Or actually, I mentioned that I had been using some apps for calibration on the Apple TV. And now I'm kind of curious to start searching around to see what's available on the Roku, but... Mentioned last week, I said, or last episode, that I'd look these up.
Standalone apps you can download and add? Mm-hmm. They give you some, test patterns and stuff? Or
guidance? Yeah, so, like, well, the first one that comes, Cerebral Gardens TV Tune-Up, does aspect ratio and overscan. You do brightness and black level. And they have a very nice, simple, it's a gray dotted eye and, like, two shades of gray on a black field so that you can adjust it so, you know, the lightest gray is just visible. A contrast adjustment, which has four white to gray circles overlaid so that you can adjust so you can see all four circles distinctly. Sharpness, a screen wipe tool that's an attempt to remove ghosting artifacts. It just blows, you know, noise on the screen. Three stars on the iTunes store that sells for 99 cents. I like that one a lot. One I want to like more, but it's got some difficulties in navigation. Oliver Eichhorn's Calibrate!
Calibrate!
Does brightness and contrast. These are both, the brightness and the contrast adjustments are both sort of classic, you know, rectangles, like five rectangles across the screen that you adjust until, you know, they're all of the five rectangles are visible as different shades. Overscan, sharpness. I found it a little harder to use simply because, like, you know, you would click on brightness and then you have to sort of navigate over to a button to show the test pattern. And it was just difficult to navigate, which I found
really frustrating. Were the test patterns themselves, did they make it very obvious as to what you should see and shouldn't see?
Both the apps seem to be very pretty clear about this.
There shouldn't be much adjustment, especially for brightness setup on most TVs nowadays. I mean,
there shouldn't be.
Shouldn't be.
But you never know if somebody's been playing around with the remote.
Or if you're in an exceptionally bright environment, your eyes just won't be able to see that super dark black level at the dark end of the grayscale unless... you crank it way up.
Well, that's
so,
like the
be aware of that.
The Epson 3500, which I am desperately in love with because I don't have to, you know, cover the entire house with blackout curtains. But, you know,
I used that thing in a well-lit room. Loved it.
I love it. But if you're in a dark room, it can be, you know, prohibitively bright. I like the fact that TV Tune-Up they've obviously experimented with the brightness and contrast tools to make them more obvious or more intuitive.
Yeah.
99 cents for TV Tune-Up, $1.99 for Calibrate. Out of those two, I'd probably pick TV Tune-Up. Jeff Perrin Music LLC has surround speaker check. It's four tests, 5.1 subwoofer, 4.0 speaker, a center speaker check. It's a free app, but it does 99 cent in-app purchases for the subwoofer or center channel check. And it's super simple. You hit play, and the speakers that should be playing audio turn from gray to blue. So it's like, okay, it's the left front channel, it's the center front channel, it's the right front channel. Sound and Vision loves it. And it's, like I said, it's a 99 cent in-app purchase for the sub or the center channel check currently.
I like it.
Yeah, and one I really, really like, it's super, super simple. Dave Levy's AV Aid. It has buttons. It's like green buttons on a gray background. Looks like a studio console punch-in. And you have a button to test left channel, center channel, right channel, 5.1, 7.1. You can generate pink, white, or brown noise. You can test phase, sweep. It has a song it plays. It'll play a 1 kilohertz test tone. There's a video test section. I love the audio test section on this. The video test section has some very basic old school TV test pictures, bars. It's free, super simple, but it's a great way to check audio. And I love the fact that we've got pink noise and white noise generators. And, you know, it's, you know, you load it and it's like, you know, is the center channel on? Is the right channel working? Did somebody mess around with somebody? Really, really quick. And in combination, you know, with a dB meter, you can use to set the levels of your channels. And we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Nice. It sounds like, too, you can quickly switch the tone between different speakers. And that's important if you're trying to earball it just without a meter. It's very doable. It helps if you can switch the sounds from one to the next very quickly so you can...
It's pretty nice that way.
Help your head match it up.
So surround speaker check and AV aid for testing your audio. And I really like TV tune up for calibrating your television.
Heck yeah.
At Joe Gaz tweets, at Patrick Norton, at AVXL, at Robert Heron, I have a new Sony XBR65X930D with Toslink to an older Sony receiver. Sometimes Mativo audio lags. Suggestions.
That's a nice TV.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's bright, colorful. Edge lit, some crazy high performance dual wave guide light back thingy. Awesome. Anyway, let's see. Well, one thing on AVRs, let's see the Toslink. How do you think this is set up? Do you think the TiVo is an older TiVo and it's connected via Toslink for some reason? Is it not? It would have to be an HDMI device, I'm assuming. I'm just trying to figure out what this setup is, because my first thought was that, if it's all HDMI, make sure in the receiver's HDMI setup, mm-hmm. there's usually a setting related to the audio functions, including things like lip sync.
Right.
So make sure none of that got messed with. It should all just be on auto, and it should do it appropriately. However, if maybe you're, for whatever reason, taking audio out of the TiVo through its optical connection and into the receiver, then I would double check the TiVo's audio setup. I don't know if it has a lag setup on that or not. Shouldn't need it. It shouldn't be out of whack. Again, I would also just double check the firmware on the receiver. Make sure there hasn't been usually a fix for things just like this in terms of timing or just something that wasn't pushed right through the software chain. But those would be my first suggestions. But let's see. Toslink. So, or he's just simply running the Toslink out of the TV to
an
older AVR.
That's what I think is happening.
Okay. That makes more sense then. So, in all TVs, well, at least all the ones I've looked at lately, double check the audio setup. Maybe try decoding everything to PCM audio and see if that helps. Mm-hmm. Just sending raw PCM to the AVR. The other thing is, at least on Samsung TVs I look at, and I'm trying to recall off of others, but they also had specific audio delay, and it was usually enabled by default when you switched over to things like optical audio output, because it was aware of some delay and it would compensate for it automatically for you. So if any of those settings have been changed, again, I would just reset the sound settings at least within the TV and try it that way. Because that optical connection going to the AVR should be generating very little lag overall. That's generally a very quick transcode from digital to back to analog there. So I'm thinking the TV is slowing something down, and I would just dig right into its sound menu. God, it took me a little bit to get to the end of that answer, but
I think it's there.
I was coming up with, what is this setup? What is going on? This is probably an older AVR that doesn't have audio return channel. So there's the other thing as well.
Part of me is like, if it's occasional and it doesn't bother you that much, I just ignore it. If you have a receiver so old it doesn't have HDMI input, I think it's probably time to upgrade it.
It's pretty close.
Fantastic boxes from Denon for
$300-$500. Those optical audio outputs are on every TV. And generally, those should provide lag-free audio output to... Right. any compatible device. So,
but just because the audio is lag free from the TV doesn't mean the processing and the receiver isn't laggy.
That's true too. You know, make sure the TV is tried on basic stereo, the straight direct mode, whatever it's called, on depending on the branding of your product. Turn off all those processing modes and sound modes and crap, and 7-channel stereo. That's about the limit I'll go, or 9 or 11 channel stereo, where it just uses all the speakers instead of just the front two. That's about as far as processing as I'll take anything. So,
there you have it. Hopefully that helps a little bit, Joe. I'm sensing a new AVR in your future. As always, the Wirecutter has a wonderful entry-level AVR.
I was gonna say. Or just a wicked soundbar.
A wicked soundbar.
It sounds like he's got some speaker setup going there, though. So, and he's got the Sony receiver. Anyway.
At this point, we just don't know.
Good luck, Joe.
At KenpoB10 tweets, question, any chance Avatar sequels will thrust 3D into the 4K HDR specs, or is the requisite filter just a huge tech hurdle? Probably the rec filter, just a huge tech hurdle. I'm going to say, in everything but a number of projectors, 3D is dead.
Commercial.
Home.
It wouldn't surprise me to see... I know nothing about any upcoming Avatar sequels. It doesn't matter. I would think, though, that given Cameron's history of pushing tech, and we were just talking about that Ang Lee 120 frame per second production last time around, and that was specifically to do 4K 60 3D in each eye. I that's where you're going to see it. If this Avatar sequel comes out, and I could see someone like James Cameron just jumping on the 120 hertz or the 120 frame rate tech to produce one of the best 4K 60 per eye 3D experiences in commercial cinema. Is it going to bring 3D back to the home theater in 4K? No. I'm still buying, or at least even the last disc I just picked up, the Super Multi Ultra Combo Edition, included not only the regular Blu-ray, but it also included the 3D Blu-ray, which I as separate discs, which I thought was odd at first, but then I realized you could do a higher bitrate encode with the 2D version. And I guess if you're trying to squeeze the very best quality out of the 2D presentation, yeah, you don't want to be fouling that up with the 3D or having that 2D pulled from the 3D. You could do a better job with just a straight 2D encode as well as the 3D. Just seemed kind of odd that ended up with three discs in the package. All Blu-ray, one 4K, one 3D, and one regular.
Regular Blu-ray.
A lot of discs in that box.
I am torn between... And I was laughing, right, because I walked up to it, and I'm like, am I never going to get used to 21st century frame rates when watching movies? Because it's, you know, at 60 frames per second, it has that soap opera quality. But the 4K, I mean, when you're looking at individual hairs on somebody's, you know, neck.
The detail is there. It does look like TV to me, though. It's like, yeah. I have to just give it some time to see. That's where the storytelling is really going to have to convince me. Because it's definitely not that film look.
Got it. Yeah, it's no 2-3 pull down going there.
No, it was smooth and crispy and
One of my favorite writers over at PC Per, Josh D. Walrath, tweets at Patrick Norton, at AVXL, at Robert Heron, is Dolby Atmos worth it? And I'm going to say if one of your favorite movies is in it, I think it's going to be, as we move forward, I think Dolby Atmos is going to be showing up on more and more Blu-ray, 4K, UHD discs. But currently,
I think a tech of object-based audio in terms of authoring it. I can see the gaming folks on PCs and consoles. Mm-hmm. Please jump on that now. I mean, they've always had positional audio in games, different tricks and ways of doing it. It would be nice to have a universal standard that that sound engineers can just work with, that would work across all the hardware we have for the home theater as well as just, you know, personal. But yeah, is it worth it? Yeah, I like the idea of just making it practical to add more speakers to a room and really use them effectively, and not in terms of, oh, this is specifically for this particular part of the room and you shouldn't really move it around. I like the concept of having more flexibility in terms of adding overhead speakers and side speakers, mm-hmm, and things like that. And to look at some of the extreme examples of it, like in a Dolby Cinema theater. And I'll talk about some of my experiences with that a little bit later. But
it's tough, right? Because if
it adds flexibility to the room in terms of how you want to really do it. So if you want 11 speakers or 20 speakers, you can make it work.
Bringing it back to people who have like family and health insurance pay for
that,
and limited size. Like
two channels upstairs and then with a 5.1 setup.
Yeah.
And a subwoofer or two, something affordable. Yeah. Or you may already have a bunch of that.
And if you have a 5.1 system and you want to buy a couple of Atmos up-firing speakers or a couple of ceiling mountable speakers, because remember, right, you're gonna need an Atmos title. I'm going to pick Gravity because I've heard the Gravity demo in one of the Wonder Rooms at Dolby Labs, and it was...
Should probably buy that as my reference.
You should.
A reference title.
That opening scene when the stuff happens, because I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen Gravity yet. That is a mind-boggling demonstration of the object-based audio.
Good.
That was also listening on, a set of Focal speakers and amps, and, that room was probably worth more than my house, which is a little terrifying to think about.
But, a tear to my eye.
You know, even if you're talking about, even if you're talking about low-end stuff, entry-level stuff or more affordable stuff.
Right.
Two channels sitting on top of the front speakers bouncing off the ceiling. There's a lot to be said there. We're going to get some speakers in and start experimenting with that. But remember, right, because you're not only going to need, you're going to need a Atmos titles. There's not a long list of those at this point. You're going to need a new AV receiver, unless you happen to be lucky enough to have one that has Atmos enabled. And then you're going to need at least two and possibly four speakers.
I'd also, I hate to go back to this, but if you ever did a setup using, I think, just Cube speakers in particular.
Right.
They're convenient as all hell. But generally, you're just not moving enough air to really make them effective. And there, if you have like an older setup that used a bunch of tiny little Cube speakers everywhere, you could repurpose some of those for the ceiling channels or something, and then add in something that moves a little more.
Well, you don't need a huge speaker. You don't need a huge speaker to move. Unless you're trying to get below. If you have a subwoofer that's cutting in at 80 or 100 hertz, you don't need a massive speaker to blow your eardrums into the center of your skull.
And a lot of people live in apartments and other things too.
Yeah. I've been playing around with that a lot lately
because I've been
playing around with different speaker setups and playing around with a subwoofer, and it's kind of amazing to realize, you don't need a massive speaker, if you're not going below 100 hertz. Now, if you're trying to get down to like 20 hertz because you want to feel the cannonballs leaving the deck of the ship, that's a whole different story, and you need a big, massive subwoofer, and we'll talk about that another time.
But Josh, four.
I really like when Atmos is working; it's pretty amazing. But understand that you're going to have to, you might want to time it when it's time to upgrade your AVR. I would, let me flat out say, I would wait until you're ready to upgrade your AVR and your speakers. I don't know if I would do it immediately right now.
No, and that is one of the nice things about home theater is that, especially on the speaker side, you can break it up into stages in terms of your upgrade plan. So I have no fear there either.
The trick is to not wait till the thing you wanted to upgrade to is no longer available for sale.
Yes.
Yes.
That's why I'm also like, wait as long as possible on the AVR. Get it.
The longer you wait, the more features are going to come in standard for less money. Except for 11 channels.
Preamps.
That's never going to be cheap. At ASOD tweets, best center channel speaker under $300.
Yeah,
man. I am really picky about matching. I'm less picky about matching surround sound speakers, but I feel weird about buying a center channel speaker that isn't matched extremely well to your left and right channel speaker. That may be complete insanity on my part, but if possible, I want you to buy a third. I want you to buy the center channel that matches the left and right speaker you already have. And if not,
that would be the best first step.
I want you to buy a third of the left and right speaker you don't have. And at that point, if you can't buy it, if they don't have a center channel and you can't buy a third of that left and right speaker to match it at the center channel, and we can argue whether or not it's good and proper to use a standard speaker as a center channel. I've heard some pretty amazing rigs where there was five of the same speakers scattered around the room, so I don't have issues with it.
Most of the best speaker setups I've heard are just it's all the same speaker.
Yeah,
so makes it simpler.
So our choice is to match whatever you already have, especially if it has a dedicated center channel. If you can't, then you need to find something similar in terms of its acoustic performance and because, you know, there's a lot of tweaking you can do. Like Odyssey, let's say, will compensate for a certain amount. But if you have a speaker with radically different characteristics on one channel, it's going to be difficult to reconcile that with the rest of your speakers in a surround sound.
Make it blend in with the fronts.
Yeah.
That could be challenging. So, yeah. And I don't know if it's a matter of simply just looking to see a similar – can you trust the specs on a speaker enough to say get something with similar efficiency? Even or,
well, I'm less concerned about the efficiency
because they sound so different.
The efficiency, right? Yeah, because the efficiency is probably the least of my concerns.
Okay.
Because if the center channel is more efficient than the left and right channel, then you just turn down the level on the center channel, right? And that'll kind of compensate for that. If the center channel is super, super, you know, if the center channel is lacking in low end or lacking in high end compared to your other speakers, then, you know, or if it just is very tonally different, it might be weird. You know,
that
I mean, the
true.
Center channel is a weird speaker to begin with, right? Because it's the big thing we do with center channels is conversation on the screen. You know, and there's lots of other stuff that happens over. But the thing that always strikes me where the center channel is most important, where I want to have clear communication of the dialogue between the actors that are going
that is
at
what it's for
in front of us. So
it has to do that well.
So in some ways, you could argue that's a very narrow chunk of bandwidth that doesn't matter that much. You picked the Andrew Jones designed Pioneer Center Channel.
Just an example.
Yeah,
that's a great kit. Very affordable. God, I think the whole 5.1 setup's like $600 or so, and just that center channel is $100.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a small speaker, and it has decent acoustics. I mean, for that price, you spend all you want, spend more, but or again, I would always go back to that. If you have a good front left right,
mm-hmm.
get its matching third. Yeah. But get it matched ideally from that same company, so there's less thought involved in terms of having to really perform heroics in terms of getting the audio tweaked to make just a consistent sound field up front. So, and I just threw that Pioneer out there just as an example.
Yeah.
So,
it's a good inexpensive speaker. It is beloved.
Yeah.
You know, make sure just try to match it as best you can.
Totally.
So.
And I was thinking also, we talk about amplified speakers too. If your amp is already overtaxed, you feel maybe you're trying to do too much with it and you have pre-outs on it, maybe an amplified center channel. Or
I'm going to say don't buy a cheap amplified center channel.
Yeah.
Don't spend
more on that.
Yeah.
You mean, so if you have enough power, then you don't need to do what I just said. Just ignore that.
Ignore that. Belay my last.
Yep.
We had a viewer commenting about Value HDR not looking so great. We're not going to mention the brand name, but basically it was cheap 4K TVs, inexpensive, sub-$1,000 4K TVs.
And you start running some of the best content through it, ultra-high-def Blu-ray, the HDR content with wide color palettes, and some of it will not look that impressive. And there's a lot of reasons for that, and this Value TV, somebody pointed out, it didn't specifically say anything about its color performance. It was just like, hey, it's a 4K screen. It has 4K apps, blah, 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 blah. It's super good value. But they weren't highlighting the fact that probably has HD color and not the DCI color that's now the standard for HDR TVs. And then the light output. If the TV isn't bragging about how much light it's dumping out, LCD in particular, then it has nothing to brag about. So, and the average light output's going to be probably under 400 nits for an average LCD compared to, you know, the 1,000+ nits of the best HDR TVs. And that light output directly determines brightness details.
Right.
So if it's not hitting that light level, if it hits 400, all the detail above that won't even be represented on the screen.
Right.
That is just that. Now, for those TVs that do lack that light, that pure light output, you can cheat in a sense that just turn the contrast performance down. Most of these TVs, when receiving an HDR signal, will jack the contrast and the backlight up to 100%. If you turn the contrast level down, you will regain detail within those peak bright details.
Right.
You'll start to see detail again, but it's going to knock the light level output so much that you're not accurately representing that content at that point. So it's kind of what you would do in the sense I always tell people with regular HD TVs to turn the contrast down until you can see the peak bright detail. But we're already dealing with so much light output for a standard anyway that's so surpassed it. It's like the standard for regular HD was authored at 100 nits. Most of the TVs now do 300-400.
Right.
The new HDR standard is authored up to 10,000 nits, and the TVs are currently hitting up to 2,000. Mm-hmm. So technically, you're supposed to leave that contrast jacked all the way up. But but I would definitely try on the lower, on the more value TVs, lower that contrast a little bit to see if you can get some detail back into those peak highlights at the expense of peak brightness. It is what it is.
It is what it is, people.
A couple of Blu-ray picks before we go.
A couple of Blu-ray picks.
Oh, I heard you.
Before we go. I don't know what I said, but I wanted to make sure I said what I didn't think I said, just in case I said it. You did a pre-order.
Yeah. Well, I did my Billy Lynn's longtime halftime walk last week. This week, Planet Earth. It's not even out until next month, which I guess is coming up.
This is No. Planet Earth 2.
2. Dun, 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 dun. Mr. Attenborough back and bigger than ever. No. This actually just premiered on BBC America about a week ago. And now it's coming to the 4K Ultra High Def Blu-ray bundle. $50. That's going to be one I want to have in the library. That's given the bitrate and the things they likely captured in that. I haven't even watched it on TV yet. I don't want to taint my experience with this TV broadcast.
Well, I'm pre-ordering it on Blu-ray.
Yeah, but that's like that's something generally. Those are like, that will show off your TV. It's good content to look at. You learn something. It's beautiful. Kind of covers all the bases. So
there you have it.
It's not cheap, but, and hey, like I said too, if you've got, every time I talk about a new 4K broadcast or something, if it's available anywhere, it seems like a handful of DirecTV customers will always go, oh, I've got it. I got it on my 4K streaming box. I don't know about the rest of the world, but DirecTV seems to be
getting
the 4K out there to more people.
Oh my
faster.
I'm a little late to the party on this one, but finally got to see Bridge of Spies last night on Showtime.
Oh, any good?
Amazing.
Oh, good.
Amazing.
I'd like to see that.
Steven Spielberg directing, Tom Hanks in a script by Matt Charman and the Coen brothers.
Sounds good.
About it's a fascinating chunk of history. The prisoner exchange that freed Gary. It's just, if you see it and you haven't seen it yet and you like history, it's a pretty amazing story. Basically, it's about a lawyer named James Donovan, and I've just lost half the audience right there, who defends a Soviet spy named Rudolf Abel, and incredibly principled human being who believed in the Constitution and America and legal process, and ends up negotiating the release of Francis Gary Powers and another American citizen that have been detained detained behind the Cold Wall, and including some spectacular. I mean, it opens up with some spectacular shots of like 1950s New York City, and it goes on to some spectacular shots of the East, the building of the Berlin Wall. Really beautiful, and it's much grittier than your typical Spielberg movie. I think because of the Coen brothers working on the script, but you've probably picked up
Spielberg
on it.
Can do gritty, man.
Yeah, he can.
He can make me uncomfortable.
Never watch Saving Private Ryan alone in a hotel room at 3 a.m.
There are enough movie mistakes in that movie to where I can't take a lot of it seriously anymore.
I just start
There's some
weeping
storytelling.
About 30 seconds into it. And just
but then you see like, oh, that's a rubber knife. Or that's a,
My suspension of disbelief in movies is much better
only
than
too
yours.
Picky.
Well, anyway, Star
good,
Wars
man.
Rogue One looks like it's going to be out on Blu-ray in April. Nice article on Screen Rant. Somebody found a pre-order link on Best Buy, which I believe has been removed. But no official pre-order, but we expect it now in April.
One of these days, I'll watch those new Star Wars movies. I haven't even seen the other one. Never mind.
One last thought before we go. You brought in a calibrated mic and wanted to talk about Room EQ Wizard.
Yeah, we were talking about What if you weren't happy with the automated setup and AVR right. using an SPL meter and other things like that? And I totally forgot that I use software and a calibrated microphone with USB input into my notebook to do a lot of real-time audio analysis, and it is super useful. Handy for many things. Speaker testing is probably the thing I use it the most for, but just positioning a speaker based upon the listening position or basic room analysis.
Right.
And I use an app called TrueRTA. It's been around for a while. Small, tight little app. Does what I need it to do, though. Produces the graphs and charts and,
nice.
And analysis. I pointed this at speakers and ran the test tone generators through them just to get relative performance out of things and see where the you know, push and pull all the buttons, see where the weaknesses are. Very good. There's also, you know, software too, like Room EQ Wizard that's been out there for a while. That's free open. I don't know if it's open or not, but I believe it's free to use. And that can even provide you some, if you're doing room design or things like that, and you want to get an idea for what the hell not to do, the worst shapes possible or things to avoid, that can be a nice tool to check out as well. But yeah, and I would say I bought a relatively inexpensive mic, Behringer's ECM-8000. It's kind of an old school mic that's been out there for a while. But I went and had it calibrated at a company that did a really nice job providing me its performance characteristics, the calibration files, the correction files that I use with the various types of software out there. I probably spent as much on the calibration as I did on the microphone, but the person really does a nice job, and it even highlights, yeah, you want to really stick to the 90-degree spot on the microphone as far as positioning goes.
Good to know.
Because it just shows very, very succinctly where the best spot on that mic is and how it performs across the entire frequency spectrum and things like that.
So. I have a funny feeling I'm about to order a mini DSP and a U-Mic 1 from the Mini DSP website. I have a funny feeling that U-Mic 1, their USB measurement calibrated microphone, which sells for $75, is probably going to be almost exactly the same as the microphone you have. So.
Shout out to Mr. Singleton over at Cross Spectrum Acoustics. What is it? CSAcoustics.com. Great guy. Great cool. to work with. Handy, friendly, and he had the gear I needed to calibrate that mic, and thanked him for it.
Woohoo!
Speaking of audio, did Kubo and the Two Strings.
Love that movie.
That was pretty good. I actually had a chance to see this in Dolby's new Market Street Lab at their Dolby Cinema Theater, which holds about 250 people. This theater is accessible from the public or from the street, so I don't know if it's actually open to the public or not. It doesn't matter. Anywho, yeah, excellent movie. The room I was in, that 250-seat room of theirs, a few characteristics. One, I'd say the room itself. Walls are, I just eyeballed it. The room's walls are at least 2 meters thick, solid concrete. Just entering this room required you to walk through two sets of soundproof doors, one on each side of the wall. That alone, just going through that, it feels like you're entering, Fort Knox or something, or just a very secure installation. Inside of the room, almost 60 speakers total, 10 subwoofers, 5 speakers behind the screen, 31 speakers on the side walls, 14 speakers overhead. Driving it all was a pair of Christie Digital 6P laser projectors. They use 2 of them in these installations for specifically doing 3D so that they can drive. Each projector is doing the vision for one eye and then being delivered to the screen simultaneously. So it's a fascinating, very expensive way to do very, very good 3D. Audio within this room was some of the best I've ever heard anywhere in terms of theater presentations. Seating. If you want comfortable seating, AMC's got it, man. I just got to tell you, the seats in Dolby's Lab Theater probably are the best acoustically in the world. However, they aren't the most comfortable. It felt like an airplane seat. It wasn't bad. Plenty good for what I was doing. And again, thanks to the folks at Dolby. Just a great presentation. More behind-the-scenes technology. Just utterly fascinating. And they also let slip that the Lego Batman movie that's coming out right now is one of the few productions you'll be able to see. If you see it at a Dolby Cinema Theater, you'll see it authored to the Rec 2020 color space. beyond the DCI color format used in Hollywood and being presented on a projector that comes very, very close, if not actually hitting that Rec 2020 color space in the display of it. So you're going to get one of the very best, should be most eye-pleasing color presentations with that new Lego Batman movie. So if for no other reason, pay attention to those deep, rich, beautifully saturated colors in that movie, especially in the Dolby Cinema presentation, because that's where you're going to be able to have the performance to drive those pixels appropriately. And looking forward to that. Sweet. A lot of good stuff in that. And as long as I'm on a roll here, a little bit of new gear, all these new pre-orders popping up. Samsung's Q8 just launched this week. That's a curved screen design, and it's got the brushed stainless steel chassis with its matching U-shaped stand. Actually, a pretty attractive screen overall. At least 1,500 nits. Dang good DCI color. That should be a fantastic. If you want that curved screen, that Q8's probably the way to go. If the curve ain't your thing, go back to Q7 or look ahead to Q9 coming up.
Oh, my goodness. With that, ladies and gentlemen, one last reminder. You can help keep us coming by donating or contributing at patreon.com/AVXL. AVXL is the website with links to all of our beloved RSS feeds. We're available now in the Google Play Store.
Oh, yeah.
And we want to thank each and every one of you for joining us each and every week.
With that,
ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
Hey, and I'm Robert Herron.
We'll catch you next week on AVXL.